Everybody, I'm Kai Risdahl. Welcome back to Make Me Smart. Making today make sense is our thing.
And I'm Kimberly Adams. Thank you for joining us for What Do You Want to Know Wednesday, the day when we answer your questions. You can email those questions to us at makemesmart@marketplace.org or leave us a voicemail. Our number is 508-UB-SMART. First up, we've got a voicemail from a listener in Arizona.
Hello, this is Mark from Chandler. I'm wondering if Kai and Kimberly can make me smart about where all the money that's leaving the market, both the stock and crypto, is going. The over $1 trillion that's been lost went somewhere. There were sellers that took that cash and did something with it. Where are they putting it? Thanks for making me smart.
You take that.
So that's a really good question. Yeah, that's it's a really good question. And part of it, I suppose, is on people who present market summaries and say, you know, $1 trillion has left the market in the last, you know, month and a half or whatever. Here's the thing that you need to know. Number one, for every seller, right? Just look at today, right? Today was terrible on Wall Street, lots of sellers. But for every seller, there is a buyer. Okay. So it's not like people are just selling and going away. Are some people selling their stock and putting it under their mattress? Yes, sure. But for every seller, there is a buyer out there. Thing number two, and this is the really important and kind of tough to wrap your mind around stuff. I'm going to say it's not real money. Of course, it's real money, but it's not real money, real money. Here's the deal, right? A lot of the losses on Wall Street, whether it's been in crypto, as we talked about the other day, or the money that's been lost in the regular equities slide, that's just because shares are worth less. Somebody said, I'm going to sell 100 shares of Microsoft at $100. And somebody said, great, I'll give you $80 for those 100 shares. That's a $20 loss on paper, but it's not like money has left the market. Okay. So it's a little bit of a misnomer. I will take some blame for that. There are people certainly pulling cash out, but a lot of it is just the falling overall level, which means stocks are worth generically less, if that makes sense.
Yeah, some people just lost money. Like,
right.
Poof, right. It's gone.
Right, exactly.
Okay.
All right, next question. Here we go.
Yeah.
Hi, this is Ted from Columbia, Missouri, home of Mizzou and Stevens College. I'm sitting out here on my back deck watching the deer in the backyard, and I got to thinking about hydroelectric. Have we done any more research into using tidal forces in this? I remember reading things about this in Life and Look magazine in the 60s. Thank you much.
Wow. Life and Look magazine.
Remember that?
I remember Life magazine. I don't remember Look magazine. Right. But this is actually a really appropriate question because I happen to be in Missouri at the moment and I did go to Mizzou. So yay. So tidal power can be harnessed in basically two main waves. And tidal power, we mean like the power of the waves. So it's one of them is building a tidal barrage, or basically a dam that captures the rise and fall of the appropriately tides. Or you can build what kind of look like underwater turbines to capture those tidal currents. However, tidal power is really not a major energy source for us. And to help explain why, we called up Brian Polaggi. He's a professor of mechanical engineering at the University of Washington. He researches marine renewable energy conversion. And what he said is that tidal power is an interesting energy source because it's actually really predictable. Unlike something like wind or solar, we know what the tides are going to be doing like years into the future. However, because there's always a however, he says it's not a major contributor to the global energy mix because it's so expensive and because of, kind of ironically, environmental concerns.
All the environmental effects we think about with hydropower, so fish passage, but now you need to also worry about marine mammal passage. You change the ecology of the whole bay behind the dam, all of those start to become issues. And as a result, we haven't seen a lot of barrages built worldwide. They also have a really high construction cost. So you'd be looking at, you know, many years of construction with billions of dollars spent before you'd start generating power. And so those are the two things we're trying to work out. It's a really interesting resource, has a lot of favorable attributes, but it's difficult to do things in the ocean. So it's expensive to start. And if we're going to do it responsibly, we need to understand how to mitigate and manage the environmental effects.
Yeah, you don't want to like have images of like dolphins, you know, being chopped up in underwater turbines. Nobody, that's just not a good look.
I didn't have that image, Kimberly, until you brought it up. But thank you very much.
You're welcome. What is it they said in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy? So long and thanks for the fish.
That's right. That's right.
So anyway, tidal barrage. Like any energy source, that's got positives, it's got negatives. But Brian says there's a lot of ongoing research in that tidal energy space right now. So hopefully they'll figure out a way to do it. And because it is like a potentially a really good option. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. Next, we have another voice memo.
Hi, this is Sarah calling from Pacifica, California, the San Francisco Bay Area. My question is, what impact, if any, will the Federal Reserve selling back bonds that they bought for quantitative easing have on long-term interest rates? Is it going to cause it to raise? Is it going to cause it to lower? As someone who's looking to buy a house, just wondering if that'll have any impact. Thanks again. Please make me smart.
Sarah. So the answer is yes. The answer is yes, it's going to have an impact. So let's remember the Federal Reserve, this is back in 2008, started this policy known as quantitative easing. Once it had lowered its interest rate that it controls, the federal funds rate, to zero, it had nowhere else to go because it's not going to go to negative interest rates, which is a whole different podcast.
Although people talked about
this policy. Oh, they did. It was totally talked about. But then, you know, Bernanke and then Yellen and then I don't know if Powell's even been asked about it, but they all said, we're not going to go negative. So stop. But they wanted to keep driving interest rates lower. So they went out and they bought a whole bunch of mortgage-backed securities and treasury bills, bonds, and notes. Okay. And when that happens, that does a couple of things. Number one, it drives the price of those securities up. The Fed has a lot of demand, right? So it drives the price up. That pushes the yields down, the interest rate down, and it also pushes liquidity out into the economy, right? Which makes money freer and easier and more flowing through the economy. So in 2008, and then again at the beginning of the pandemic, the Fed really went into the bond markets and started buying and getting a lot of money out there, and those rates went down. Now, the Fed has said, in addition to raising the federal funds rate, right, interest rate that it controls, it is also going to start letting those bonds mature off its balance sheet. It will not be buying anymore. And thus, the reverse is going to happen. It's actually called quantitative tightening. And the short answer is, yes, it's going to drive long-term interest rates up. And if you look at the maturities distribution on the Federal Reserve's balance sheet, you will see that most of the debt that it owns, most of the treasury it owns, are at 5 years maturity or greater. That is to say, on the longer end of the yield curve, right? Which is help drive what?
You threw out a lot of terms there. Yeah.
All right.
So when you're saying the range of maturities, you're talking about when the Fed issues bonds, you've got 2 year bonds, you've got 5 year bonds, you've got 10 year bonds, meaning when the government is going to pay you back that money with interest. And what I hear you saying is that it's that tail end that is kicking up?
It's the long end, right? The Fed owns most of the treasury bonds that the Federal Reserve owns are at 5 years maturity or greater, right? Which means the ones that it's going to roll off its balance sheet are at 5 year maturities or greater. So those interest rates are going to go up. Okay. Now, Sarah, specifically to you, would be home buyer, the bond yield that you want to keep an eye on is the 10-year, because mortgage rates correlate most closely with the 10-year yield. That is not to say that they're the same, but when the 10-year goes up, mortgage rates tend to go up a commensurate amount. And right now, the 10-year is at about 3-ish plus or minus percent. A 30-year fixed rate mortgage is about 5.5. So keep an eye on the 10-year, and that'll figure it out. Help you figure it out anyway. Yeah.
Yes.
So there you go. Okay. Thank you for the clarification. I appreciate that. Last thing, an email from Michael in Washington, D.C., who wrote in with this question. Here it is. Now that we're meeting again in person, is there a word to describe that awkward moment when you introduce yourself to somebody with whom you've Zoomed several times but don't remember? Oops. I could see that happening to me.
Yeah, especially for people who like don't have their camera on a lot on Zoom. Or you've only seen them from like the mid chest up ever in your life. Mm-hmm. Like, I remember the first time I met one of our producers on the tech show in real life, and I didn't realize that she was significantly like smaller than me, like shorter.
Oh, wow.
And I was just like, oh, that is what you look like relative to me. Cause that's what really gets me when I meet people I've only seen on Zoom before. Like, they're the former senior editor on the tech show is much taller than I expected him in real life. And I'm just like, cause on Zoom, everybody's the same size, but in real life, we are not.
On Zoom, everybody's the same size. On the internet, nobody knows you're a dog or a cow. You know what that far side is.
But in terms of a term for that awkward moment,
I don't know.
I got nothing.
But you know what? Write to us. Tell us if you can think of a word for when you meet somebody in your life who you've met on Zoom, but you don't really remember or you can't really place them.
Yes. And Marissa linked to this story where Germans have apparently coined more than 1,000 new words to describe pandemic life, but they don't seem to have one for this. So that's weird.
Well, if the Germans don't have it, then, you know.
I mean, who would? Who would? All right.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. So that's it for us today. Thank you for listening. We will be back tomorrow with some news and some make me smiles. Fingers crossed that they actually exist tomorrow. And
yeah. Send us your questions, though, would you? And your commentary on that word that we were just asking you about. It's makemesmart@marketplace.org, or you can just leave us a voicemail, 508-UB-SMART. And we are back tomorrow.
Make Me Smart is produced by Marissa Cabrera, today with help from Rose Conlin. Our intern is Tiffany Bowie.
Jake Cherry was in charge in the control room downtown. Ben Talladay and Daniel Ramirez composed our theme music. Bridget Bodner is the senior producer of this year's podcast.
Indeed.
Yep.
And I should have said this earlier, but whenever you encounter somebody from Mizzou, you're supposed to be like, M-I-Z-Z-O-U.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.